back to another episode of the Fundamentally Sound Podcast, powered by CLNS Media. And this episode is brought to you by 19.9 Threads. I can't stress enough, this is an absolutely awesome company. They do a lot of retro replica shorts. They have t-shirts, they have hoodies, and this is teams like Wake Forest, and Xavier, and Indiana, and Michigan State, Purdue, St. John's. I personally have the Wake Forest, Butler, and Indiana State shorts, and they're legit. I wear them all the time. I wouldn't be standing for these guys if not. So definitely go check them out at 19nine.com. If you see anything you like, obviously go ahead and buy it. And when you do, if you put in Fundamentals at checkout, you'll save 10%. So what's better than that? Like I said, awesome site, a lot of retro stuff. The shorts are legit. They run true to size. Shirts, sweatshirts, teams all over the country. So go ahead and check them out, 19nine.com. And again, at checkout, put in Fundamentals. And you'll get 10% off your entire purchase. So make sure you go stock up for March Madness. I'm not going to waste too much time here. This is a huge podcast. We have three different guests. We have Sam Vecenie from The Athletic talking the Pac-12 tournament. We have Chad Brendel of Bearcat Journal talking the American tournament. And we have Aaron Torres of The Athletic and Kentucky Sports Radio to talk the SEC tournament. Again, please rate, review, subscribe to the show. I can't thank everybody enough. We started cracking into the rankings for the last episode with Fran Fraschilla and Travis Steele. I definitely want to keep doing that. It's cool to see and helps a lot on the back end with getting guests and things along those lines. So, again, please rate, review, subscribe. Check out 19.9 on Twitter and 19.9.com. Again, Fundamentally Sound Podcast, sponsored by CLNS Media. And we'll get into it right away here with Sam Vecenie. And now I welcome on my guy. One of the listeners' favorite guests, Sam Vecenie from The Athletic. Sam, what's going on, man?
Not too much. I'm just sitting here watching the Oscars. I'm watching Timothy Chalamet like clap like a crazy person because I think he's drunk right now. But that's about what's going on here.
How much do you what percentage of people there do you think are drunk?
I don't know. I've thought that a lot. Like over the years, I don't know.
Like if I said
like enough to where I would say under right now, I would say over in 3 hours.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Like it's enough to where, so like I live probably 7 blocks from where this is happening. Like I live like right there. I will not drive tonight because of it. We are talking about like a lot of rich people that have drivers and stuff, but I will be careful about driving tonight. Like
city's like, just wasted tonight.
Oh yeah, like I might even go out. Like I'll like Laura's in Montreal right now. Like I might like go out onto Hollywood Boulevard and like grab a drink or something and see what the fuck is going on. We'll see. I don't know.
It's so weird to think about that because I always forget like you're out there and it's 6:48 out there your time.
I'm like,
you mean go to bed? Because it's late out here.
No, like, it's not even time to go out yet.
Either. Right, right.
And, I mean, this party, tonight the party will not sleep until like 2 o'clock in Los Angeles, or at least in Hollywood. I'm past that at this stage of my life. I am far too old to do this at this stage. Like, go out and drink like crazy, let me tell you.
My motto is daytime is for drinking, nighttime is for sleeping.
Yeah.
I'm very content with that.
No, I like did a little bit of work on Friday night at a bar and like had a had an old fashioned and just like kind of hung out. Like it's hard, man. Like if I have a drink after like 10 o'clock, I'm going to wake up like a little bit rough in the morning.
It's not even past that for me anymore. It's like draft beer versus bottled beer. And I feel weird in the morning.
Really?
Yeah. Like draft beer for whatever reason. Like, I feel like I wake up, I could have, like, 4 draft beers, and I'm like, I wake up, I'm like, so I feel like just a little, like, weird. If I have bottled beer, I'm fine the entire time.
That's bizarre. I know. That's a you problem. That's not a bottled beer slash draft beer problem.
But it's like, I like also have friends around here that have like said the same thing.
Okay, maybe that's a Cincinnati problem.
It might be. Like, Cincinnati just has shitty, like, taps or something like that.
Oh, my God. That's a mess.
Speaking of problems, the Pac-12 has a bunch of them because that conference is not great.
It's a bad conference. It's not great.
So we're, you know, for those that are listening, obviously you know by this point what we're doing. We're doing conference tournament previews because, I mean, conference tournament week is my favorite week of the year.
I would agree with that. You've pitched that to me before. I wouldn't agree with it. I would say it's my second favorite after the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, but I understand where you're coming from.
Right. So just I'm just taking the entire week from Monday to Sunday, however you want to look at it. I love this week. I'm intrigued by the Pac-12 because of how bad it is. Like, I might not want to watch a lot of these games, but I'm intrigued by the outcome of this tournament.
I'm going to be there. Right. So, I'm going to have to watch the games. Like, I'm going to be forced to sit there and, like, actually just, like, sit through them, which is going to be miserable. But it won't be miserable because there are actually randomly a lot of, like, high-impact, high-intensity games between potential bubble teams. Like, you look at this bracket. You could have Washington-USC in the quarterfinals is, like, a play-in game. You could then have USC-Utah in the semifinals is, like, a play-in game. Oregon is going to get Utah maybe in the quarterfinals. If Oregon can make a run to the finals, you know, maybe the committee takes pity on them. You should never take pity on that program for a multitude of reasons, but, you know, maybe they'll just toss them a bit. I think UCLA still needs to do a little bit of work. They need to get through Stanford at least and get to the semifinals of the league tournament where they would likely face off against Arizona. And Arizona State is a trash show right now. Oh. And they have Colorado in the first round, and then they have to play Arizona, their rival, in the second round, the quarterfinals, if they are to proceed past Colorado, which is no sure bet right now, given how Arizona State has played this year and given that Colorado beat them earlier in the year.
Yeah, everyone's talked about Arizona, and rightfully so. I want to ask you, what in the living hell is going on with Arizona State? Because this was this was a team that, you know, it's not like they've been inconsistent, they were undefeated with wins over Xavier and Kansas on neutral court and at Fog Allen. And they're supposed to get better with the additions of, you know, like Mitchell and Kamani Lawrence. Like, they're supposed to add this wing depth, and they've fallen apart since then. Like, why? They shouldn't have in the Pac-12.
Yeah, I mean, that's a significant concern. So I think that what we saw early in the season was the epitome of a hot shooting start, right? They were unconscious early in the year. Like, they shot 13 of 27 from three and had a 1.4 point per possession mark against Xavier. They had a 1.23 point per possession mark against Kansas in Fog Allen and shot 14 of 28 from three. Right. Like, even their game against Kansas State, they dropped 1.35 points per possession, 9 for 18 from 3, and turned it over only like 12 times in a super high possession game. Like, this team, when they get rolling, they're basically unbeatable, as they showed throughout the early portion of the year. But the problem is that they are not that consistent of a shooting team as the one that they showed early in the year. And that's going to be a problem for them going forward. They just aren't good enough defensively to have an inconsistent offensive attack. And Trey Holder and Shannon Evans and Remy Martin and Cody Justice, Romello White, these guys are all good offensively. I think they all present significant problems defensively. Like, Remy Martin is probably the best defender out of all of them. He's still a 6-foot-tall, 170-pound freshman who can just he just gets bullied to the rim every single time.
There's great rim protection there to help him.
Right. So, and he gets lost off ball. Like, they're not a good defensive team. And, by the way, their defense has actually improved a little bit over the course of conference play. So, like, they're not a good team. It's just kind of the fact of the matter. And I think that the hot shooting start kind of made people think that they were good, but I don't know that they ever were.
But even with the shooting, though, they were always good at like getting to the line, just because of how like shifty Evans and Horford
Sure.
was. It almost made me feel like, okay, they weren't as reliant on shooting as, say, like Florida is or was, just because, okay, you can get 15 points from the line between two guys, your two main guys. Am I was that crazy for that, or are they just or is it just as simple as they just need to hit shots, like to the point where it doesn't matter if they're getting fouled or not?
Well, they're definitely slightly worse at getting to the line. They have a 36.8 free throw rate in conference play. They're at 42.2% on the year, so they were
Okay.
getting to the line considerably more in non-conference play. But the problem with them, I think, is mostly the fact that they don't defend, and you can't count on knocking down shots over the long term whenever you don't have any like shooters over 40% from three. Like, they have no shooters at 38% from three right now. So when you don't have any elite level shooters and you're counting on shooting, it's going to be a problem when you also can't defend.
So a lot of people ask me this heading into this past Saturday, of is the USC UCLA winner a now lock for the NCAA tournament? My answer was only if USC wins. They obviously
Yeah.
didn't win. UCLA did. Do you think USC is still kind of comfortably in, where I say when I say comfortably, and I mean 9 seed or better, maybe a 10 seed, or are they now firmly on the bubble where your first four or one of the last four buys?
Yeah, USC is a really tough one because a lot depends on what you think of their quadrant one wins. Their
Right.
quadrant one wins are a little bit weaker than other quadrant one wins. And if the committee just kind of counts every quadrant one win equally, then USC is going to be fine. But I don't think they're going to do that. I think the committee can see through it a little bit. And I think USC is an NCAA tournament team from just a talent perspective. Their RPI is still pretty high as well. So, if they just kind of rely on that number to an extent, I think there's a chance that USC just kind of glides in as a 9 seed. But I will say this, like, USC needs to not lose to Washington or Oregon State in the first game. And I think that they would be best off beating Utah. And the good thing is that they've housed Utah both
Yeah,
times they've played
and
them.
they was at yeah, I was at Utah recently too.
Yeah, like, if they get to the Pac-12 finals, I can't see the committee leaving them out. And
Yeah,
I think they actually have a really good road to get to the Pac-12 finals.
even if, like you said, if they beat Washington or Oregon State, that feels like it should be enough too, because you are, you're second in the conference. You do have a couple of those quadrant one wins. You can even make an excuse for the bad loss against Princeton, but.
Yeah, three of their top six guys were out.
Right.
That's not something that I think the committee is going to hold against them all that much.
Right. So I think that's one. What are the, who are the teams? Everyone else on the bubble. UCLA is on the bubble, I think, now after the win at USC. Utah, Oregon, Arizona State back on the bubble. I still think they're comfortably in the same like 8-9 range, but.
If Arizona State loses to Colorado, they should not get into the tournament.
Right.
I will just flat out say that. Like, I do not think that you should put in a team that went 8-11 in this
It's so
dogshit
bad. That's
Pac-12.
so bad. It feels like they're in right now just because of their. I mean, the only reason they're in is because, I mean, outside of like, is St. John's the only other team that has better wins than the two better wins than Arizona State?
Probably, yeah. I mean, you can also say that they beat USC and UCLA at home. Like, those are
Yeah.
decent wins. They beat Utah on the road. That's a pretty solid win. It wouldn't surprise me if the committee just decided, you know what, like, if we're considering these other Pac-12 teams that, Arizona State is beaten, they're 3-1 against Utah and USC and UCLA. They largely took care of business. Let's let them slide into the tournament and, put them in the play-in, put them in the like first four or whatever.
Right.
It wouldn't shock me if they did that, but I would not put them in if they lose to Colorado. If they beat Colorado and lose to Arizona, fine, whatever. But I really think they need to take care of business in that first game. I will also say that, like, Washington also has a chance, I think. They beat Kansas
Yeah,
essentially
that's
on the
true.
road. That Montana win, and the Belmont wins, like,
Looks
those two
better.
wins are not too bad at all, actually.
Yeah, it would have helped if Belmont would have won.
For sure. Absolutely. Arizona State and Arizona are both quality wins in the league. I think they're on the outside looking in, though. You know, they go 10-8 in the league, and really they're, you know, buoyed in a lot of ways by two wins over Washington State, two wins over Cal, and two wins over Colorado, all of whom are outside the KenPom top 100. So, like, they're 4-8 against the good teams in the Pac-12 right now. So, like, it's hard for me to buy Washington as a legit at-large unless they get to the Pac-12 final. Oregon, same boat. Oregon, the only, like, real, like, solid win that they have right now is that they swept Arizona State and they beat Arizona at home whenever Arizona had, like, half of their team available, including not having their coach available. So I can't imagine them getting anywhere near the tournament unless they get to the Pac-12 final. So Utah, I think, is the one that probably has the most interesting case, though. So Utah beat Missouri in the non-conference. They took care of business by beating UCLA. They beat Arizona State on the road. They beat Washington. They beat Oregon and Oregon State on the road. They've actually done a decent amount of damage that makes me think that, okay, if they get to – if they beat USC and they beat – who do they have? I believe that they have Oregon in the second round. If they get to the Pac-12 final as well, I think that maybe they would be on slightly more solid footing. But this looks like a four-team or a four-bid league to me right now, and that's if Arizona State wins its first game.
Do you think this tournament's going to be, just because of how kind of terrible this conference is, do you think it's going to be more wide open and you'll see runs by some of these, or do you think it'll be the top four in the semifinals or something like that?
I don't know what the fuck's going to happen this term. Like,
yeah, seems about right.
so Stanford is the 5 seed in this tournament. They're actually good. They're 17-14, but they were missing like half of their team through December, basically through December 3rd or, whenever. So like, or maybe even like January, to be honest, now that I think about it, like looking at this Cal loss that they have, it was their first game with KZ Apala, I believe. And like, they still were without a couple of other guys. So, I mean, like if they would have beaten that Cal team, like with KZ and like with like some of their other guys, I don't think they're an at-large team, but I think that like they're a dangerous ass team. Like nobody wants
talking about.
Yeah, nobody wants to play them in the Pac-12 tournament because they are legitimately a dangerous team. They beat UCLA earlier this year. UCLA beat them whenever they came back to Pauley. They're going to get them in the second round because, let's be honest, Cal is not competing right now.
No.
So Stanford UCLA, I think, is something of a play-in game for UCLA. They need to beat Stanford, and Stanford can give them all sorts of problems, especially when their freshmen play well, and Dejon Davis, Oscar Da Silva, and KZ Apala.
All right, so this is taking place in Vegas. You get $100. Who are you putting it on?
My bar tab. It will be better spent.
Well, you're in Vegas. You get to drink for free if you're sitting there.
That's true. And let's be clear, I will be sitting there.
as you should.
Yeah. Making me put money down on it, I would probably pick Arizona. I think they're pretty clearly the best team in the league. They're the only team in the top 45 of KenPom right now.
That's so crazy. That's so bad.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
Not great. Not a great league. Not a great year out west for basketball. Gonzaga's good. St. Mary's is good. Neither. None of these teams other than Arizona. And maybe sometimes USC is good.
I was going to say, USC, like, it would not shock me if USC gives a one seed trouble in the second round of that tournament.
Yeah. That's possible.
Just because they have enough talent. Like, Jordan McLaughlin's good enough to, like, bother, a good guard at one of those one seeds.
Yeah, and they've been sneaky good defensively over the course of the Pac-12 season. They were the second best defense in the Pac-12, which, hey, again, not awesome. But,
right, but that's still, what you need. Like, it's still good to see that rather than, like, their six or something like that.
Right, exactly. So, I would say Arizona. I would bet that Arizona is probably going to be, 2-1, 2.5-1, maybe.
I would guess at most they might be like +175 even or something like that.
wouldn't be out of the question. I mean, just looking at the KenPom odds for the tournament, KenPom has Arizona at only a 24% chance. So, like,
kind of crazy.
Maybe although they're it's not super, a little bit lower.
They're not super high on KenPom, though, right? They're like 20 something, 22.
Yeah, because their defense is just trash fire half the time.
Yeah.
Which, like, yeah, also Arizona, the best team in the league. They've been better defensively recently. I think that's absolutely worth stating. Over the course of the last five games where they've had their, like, full complement of players available, 67 points in 63 possessions to USC, 70 points in 72 possessions to Arizona State, 65 and 69 possessions to Oregon State, 67 and 67 to Stanford, and 54 and 65 to Cal, which, you know, let's adjust for Cal. That's probably about a point per possession game. They've actually been pretty good defensively recently, and I think that that's the key. They've started to relatively figure it out. They're not there yet, but they've, like, kind of turned the corner, I think, defensively a little bit.
Now, the last thing I want to ask you about is with Arizona, with kind of that, I don't know, lack of a better word, bizarre statement that Ayton, Hawkins, and Trier are all, like, leaving the program to go pro once the season ends. Now, it's no surprise that, like, Ayton's leaving, obviously, but the fact that, like, Miller's talking about that, you know, in early March before postseason's even begun, like, what the hell?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised that Sean did that.
Yeah, I mean, again, everyone knows Ayton's leaving, but, like, if Hawkins returned, I wouldn't have been surprised, or...
I'll be honest, like, it's kind of, like, thought of as known, like, it's been known for a while they were both going to declare for the draft at least and see what was going to happen. To just have Sean flat out say they're gone is pretty funny, I think. Like, it's legit kind of funny.
Do you ever remember this happening? Like,
Rick Pitino did this shit all the time. Like, he'd just say, oh, yeah, he's going to the pros.
Well,
like, he's not going to be here next year.
Pitino also said every year was, like, his most talented team ever.
Right, like, you can never trust Rick Pitino.
Right.
But in general, but in mostly with this.
In the sense of something like this, where it's not Rick Pitino coach.
I can't really.
It
was a weird thing. I think that the reporter just kind of caught Sean, like, in a quick moment where he's, like,
just didn't give,
like,
a fuck,
laughing about this a little bit.
I mean, I love it. Like, I love the transparency. Just like, yeah, they're probably going to leave after this year. Because, again, who cares? Like, in the grand scheme of things, who cares? It's just, like, optics-wise, probably not the best look, I'm assuming.
I don't even think it's a bad look. It was just kind of bizarre.
Yeah.
He didn't let the kids announce it a little bit. Like, I will certainly be asking Raleigh Hawkins and Alonzo Trier, hey, you're leaving next year. Why? Like,
what's like, your outlook for you, you know, when you put on your NBA draft hat of... You know, obviously Ayton, I think, is the number one prospect in basketball.
Yeah.
But what about, you know, Hawkins and Trier? Are they mid-second round guys? Or what's your take on them from a NBA outlook?
I think they're both second round picks. Alonzo is having the best like high volume, high efficiency season in the country in terms of scoring prowess this year. He's really impressive as a scorer, and that's absolutely worth commending. Raleigh Hawkins hasn't really had the impact that I was hoping for just in general this year as kind of that role playing wing. Like, he's been a little bit better recently, but, like, coming back from injury, I thought he would be a significant, significant factor.
Right.
As, like, someone who could really, really help them defensively, particularly. And it just kind of hasn't happened. Like, he's averaging, like, 14 points and 4 rebounds and 3 assists and shooting 37% from 3 and not finishing as well inside this year. And, you know, he hasn't taken on the tough defensive assignment in the way that we were hoping he would take that leap this year. So, I don't know. It's a tough one. Like, I'm not as excited about him as I was coming into the year.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I always wonder when a player like him comes back from injury, just how much of is it lingering? Just the way that he plays and everything like that.
Yeah, it might be. It's totally possible. It's a foot injury, so that's a hard injury to come back from.
So, all right, man, I appreciate you coming on. Where can everyone find your stuff?
Find me at The Athletic, where I write about college basketball. I'll be in Las Vegas this week. Hopefully I'll be writing and not like just passed out in my room half the time. The Fieldhouse podcast I record twice a week. The Game Theory podcast I record three times a week about. So go follow me on all those things and, you know, come along for the ride.
All right. Thanks a lot. Hi, guy from BearcatJournal.com, Chad Brendel, who covers all things Cincinnati. But, of course, we'll be on here talking American Athletic Conference Tournament. But before that, we got to start with Sunday's game in Wichita, which was it was a great game, but not a great played or well played game, I should say. Like, those offenses stunk down the stretch. Am I wrong for thinking that way?
Somewhat, yes, because I think there were a fair number of open shots that were missed. But I think that was also a game that those two teams were just fighting so hard. I don't know that they had anything left in the final 5 minutes. Like, we were doing the site podcast a little bit earlier, and we were talking about it. And it was like those two teams, because this is only the second time they played, you'd think there still would have been some feeling out process. That felt like the 15th time they played, and both of those teams knew everything that the other was doing. Both coaching staffs did a great job getting their team ready, and it was just a fight. I mean, that's really the only way you can describe it. And the funny thing is, like, that's actually both of these programs. It's just that both of these programs this year happen to have a lot of offense, because both of these programs are known for defense and toughness and rebounding.
Yeah, Wichita's trash defensively this year.
Yeah, but because of the way that their roster is made up,
right,
they match up well with Cincinnati because they've got big guys that, you know, they did a great job keeping the ball away from Gary Clark.
Yep.
And Kyle Washington was cold. I mean, he was 4 of 15. If Kyle has a normal Kyle Washington game where he's 7 or 8 of 15, Cincinnati probably walks away with that game. But it was a competitive game. It was a bloodbath of a game, but it was not the most aesthetically pleasing.
No. But that's probably that was probably perfect for the American, right? Like, you have the two marquee for this year, the two marquee programs on Sunday by itself, you know, kind of in a standalone game. So you had an hour essentially before some of the mid-major championship games tipped off, and you have a close game down the stretch. And I think more importantly for the American, you have an outright winner.
Absolutely, right? How anticlimactic would that have been if Wichita State won? And then they're both champions, and they both go back into their locker room with the trophy. And right. Like,
the only thing I can think of is at least you would, like, Wichita would have won at Wichita.
Yeah.
And then they can yell, okay, well, we went 2-0 against Cincinnati, so we feel like, you know, and we're the one.
We're the champs. Right.
But I think for a conference standpoint, it had to be the best thing for not just Cincinnati, but anybody to win that conference outright this year, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, a tie, I just don't get like what it would have done to be good for the conference, other than we have two really, really good teams at the top and then a third team that, you know, is right top 25-ish. I think that's better than most projected when the season started. Everybody thought that Wichita State would be that top five team with Cincinnati in 10 to 15 range. Nobody really, you know, had Houston having the type of season that they're having. But Cincinnati wins it and wins it by two games. So I think that's the thing that kind of hasn't been talked about is you win it by two games. That's a pretty convincing conference championship, especially in a league where, you know, you've got two top four seeds basically battling it out.
Yeah, I think that's maybe why people aren't, you know, realizing it. It's because it came down to the last game where it's like, okay, it was winner take all essentially. And then it's like, oh shit, they actually won by two games, not one or anything like that, which, you know, and then by this point, no one's looking at, I feel like, conference record. It's more, okay, what seed are they in the conference tournament? Which, how big is it getting the one seed this year? Because like you said, it feels like, I know Tulsa's been playing better. They've actually been playing pretty well lately. But how important is it getting the one seed and avoiding Houston in the semifinals?
It's big, especially in this scenario where you feel like Cincinnati jumped up their resume. They got their signature win.
Yeah.
Now they don't need to win two games. They don't need to beat Houston and Wichita State in the tournament to get, quote unquote, you know, to bolster their resume. They can hang their hat on that Wichita State win on their court on senior day and say, that's our marquee win. And not only is that our marquee win, but it was the last game of the regular season and it was on national TV. You know, everybody on the committee was watching that game. You got to make your impression there, and you don't have to just absolutely batter yourself going through the conference tournament. So a win-win on Cincinnati's part. Also a win-win because I think that Wichita State team is going to be pissed off in the conference tournament.
Yeah, they're good. I know me and you talked quickly after the game at Cincinnati, and it was one of those teams that I was way more impressed in person than I was watching them on TV. Yeah. And that was one of the first times I've ever felt that way about a team. And then, now I walk away going, okay, well, I guess kind of who are they? Like, it was a weird game on Sunday, too. Like you said, it was very really physical. The first game wasn't as physical. It was a little bit more open and more offensive. And it's going, okay, well, who are they? Because if they can defend like that and play the way they did offensively the first time against Cincinnati, they're a Final Four caliber team.
Well, you know what, Bobby? What people, I don't think, looked at in that game, that wasn't like a game where both teams were at like 8.8 points per possession. Both teams ended the game at a point per possession. It was just a slow tempo game.
The first offense game was definitely up
yeah.
and going. Yeah.
There were a lot more possessions in the first game. The second game, Cincinnati had 62 possessions, Wichita State had 61, and the final was 62-61. So they were both at exactly a point per possession. So, they're a team. If they could play on defense anything close to what they did against Cincinnati, if you're a one seed in the Sweet 16 and they're a four, you are hating life.
Right.
Because that is the quality of a one or a two seed, really, if they're playing even remotely well on defense.
Well, especially if imagine, you know what's going to happen? Kansas is going to be their one seed. And you're going to hear all Kansas versus Wichita conspiracy theories.
Yeah, that and in that game, I would be real tempted to take. I probably would take Wichita in that game.
Yeah, because
I think they're more consistent,
and they can guard.
Yeah.
the wings. You know, they have big wings. Like, that was my biggest takeaway, is Landry Shamet looks 7'2" in person.
He is much bigger in person, and Shaq Morris is a monster.
Even
live,
even like Reeves is a lot bigger in person.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good. He's 6'6", 6'5", 6'6".
And like when you watch them on TV, I don't think you can really capture just how, like, not only are they big, but they're long. Like, Shamet's long,
really long. Yeah,
Brown's long. Like, that's why I think they'd match up well against Kansas. They can really bother Svi and Graham and Newman that way. But going back to this game, for Cincinnati standpoint, fans got to be breathing a little bit of a sigh of relief, right? Like a loss there, and it's a good season, but that resume kind of lacks, like you said, the marquee win. You have quality wins, but it's one of those, okay, well, who did you really beat type situations?
Yep. Yeah.
How big of a sigh of relief is that from the Cincinnati fan base?
It's huge, because it gives at least that validation that this team can win a big game in an environment like that. Talking to Dan Hoard, he said it was maybe the loudest environment that he's ever called a game in.
Yeah.
That place was jacked up. And, you know, early in that first half, Cincinnati goes on that 16-3 run, kind of takes the fans out of it and neutralizes it a little bit. But then Wichita State comes right back and throws a punch right back at them. And, you know, they went back and forth the entire second half. And for Cincinnati to hang in there and show that toughness and the ability to get a bucket when they needed, get a stop when they needed, was, I think, huge, not only for the perception, but also for this team's psyche, for their mentality that they can win this type of game.
Was there, and I think this is a shot that'll be remembered kind of 3 months from now, what's the last time that we've seen a big shot is Jacob Evans hitting that three at the top of the key? Because that was one of those that I felt like, all right, that was the game, kind of the dagger three, where he was limping. It looked like they were debating timeout. Then he comes down and just drills a three late in the shot clock.
Yeah, I mean, the question at that point in time is, why aren't you taking him out? Because he's cramping up. I thought initially, when he went to the bench, you could see a knot on his thigh, and I thought he got, like, somebody kneed him in the thigh, but it turns out it was cramps.
He kind of pointed to, like, his knee, too, where I was like, oh, maybe he caught, like, a knee to knee. My first reaction was, well, thank God it's not the ankle, right? Like, that's what everyone's
concerned. Yeah, that he had just turned. Right. Yeah, he had just turned it Thursday night against Tulane. But, you know, he battled through it. And I would enjoy Jacob Evans over these next couple weeks, because
he's got to leave.
I think he's playing his way out of college.
Yeah, I mean, the American's going to be a little weird next year because you assume you lose Evans, you assume you lose Shamit, who's going to be probably a first-round pick.
Yeah.
And you lose Milton's gone, and then you lose, you know, everyone else. And who knows what happened? You know, Terry Larry already said, like, sounds like he's done at UConn.
Can't imagine Jalen Adams comes back.
Right, and then you lose all the seniors, obviously, that are, you know, kind of around the league. What is this league? And I know it's hard to predict next year, and I don't want to ask because I just started thinking about when we started talking about Evans. What's this league going to even look like next year?
I had a conversation with a couple people about this the other day, and it's hard to tell. I mean, you would have to think, you know, Houston loses Rob Gray, but and Devin Davis. But they still have quite a bit coming back. If Evans comes back, Cincinnati's still going to have Kane Broome, Jacob Evans, and Jaron Cumberland.
Yeah, they're still a top 20 team in America in the preseason.
At that point, you figure out inside, you know, they've got four bodies that can play on the inside. You just tell those guys to block shots and rebound and play defense, and these guys are going to take care of it. Right. Like,
make shots inside the restricted area, and you're good.
Yeah. But if without Evans, I mean, still, Broome and Cumberland would be a formidable duo, but you would think you need one more. Like, you would need Keith Williams to really step up and slide into that Jacob Evans role. It would be a complete – I mean, I would you look at Central Florida? You know, if they've got Taco and B.J. Taylor back, like
– Yeah, maybe. But can they stay healthy, you know?
And Aubrey Dawkins.
Yeah, that's the thing. Dawkins coming back from missing the entire year, I think, is arguably the biggest addition to them.
Yeah, I mean, you've got an NBA wing, a guy that I thought was going to be first-team all-league and maybe challenge for player of the year in Taylor that missed half of the season, and then you put that 7'6" monster in the middle that you can't score over. I would guess going into the season with those, they would have the best three at the top of the roster.
Yeah.
I would probably say Central Florida, but Wichita is going to be the interesting one because, man, they've got six seniors. Shamit's got to go, I would think.
Yeah, if he's a first-round pick, he's got to leave.
Yeah, and then McDuffie, I would guess, comes back.
Yeah, McDuffie's probably back.
But then everybody – basically, it's McDuffie and Reeves.
Yeah. I mean, that's not a bad two to at least build around.
Right, but you're replacing all four of those big guys are the key to that team, and they're all going to graduate.
Yeah, and even a guy like Fran Camp who just provides that outside scoring. Yeah, so, but let's get into the American.
With Fran Camp leaving, there's a church rec league that's going to get a 50-point-a-game score immediately in about three weeks, a month. Yeah,
if he moves here, I'm calling him immediately. come play, because I will happily just pass it to you on the wing. Just as long as there's not under 5 seconds left and he has to shoot.
With a 7-footer on it.
Right. Let's get into the American tournament, because I'm always a little, hesitance for the right word. I flip-flop what I think about these tournaments where the league is – you know, a heavy top and then a bunch of question marks to nothing after that. I never know if it's going to just be chalk or if that ends up being the crazy league. What do you think ends up happening this tournament? Is it going to be chalk or is it going to be, you know, are we going to see a 6 or 7 seed in the semifinals?
Well, I mean, like I talked about, I have to think Wichita State is going to be really pissed off. Coming into this thing and looking to win this tournament to make a statement. Like, I have to think that. So that takes – they play – and, you know, it's interesting because if Temple gets into that second round, if they beat Tulane, Temple has beaten Wichita State at their place and almost beaten Wichita State in Wichita. So for some reason, that's a matchup that gives Wichita State some problems. But here's the problem with the bottom of that bracket, Regs. You're going to have to – if Temple, Tulane, Central Florida – I'm not even going to say ECU's name. If Temple, Tulane, Central Florida are going to make a run, they have to go through Wichita State and Houston to get to the finals.
Right.
That's not going to happen. It's just not. So even if Temple's able to take down Wichita State, they're not beating Houston in the semifinals. So I don't see an upset coming out of there. SMU – I feel worse for them than probably anybody in the country.
Because they should have been the third.
At worst, the fourth, because Houston has been really good.
Yeah,
like,
that's true. That's true.
Houston and SMU could have had a hell of a battle for the 3-4 spot, and you could have had four teams in this league in the tournament and going in and looking at, man, these semifinals and finals are going to be awesome.
Right. Or at worst,
on Saturday and Sunday.
At worst, you have three teams in and a bubble team.
Right. But Shake, from everything, it sounds like he's not even going to be able to come back for this.
Yeah, I saw that today. I mean, they did it for all intents and purposes.
He's out. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, UConn probably wins that game.
Maybe. I don't trust that.
You don't? Well, I don't necessarily either, but SMU's got four guys. Like,
well, that's, I still might take, though. I might take, you know what? I might take four and Jankovic over. I'm not
going to say you're wrong. I would not be shocked to see SMU at noon on Friday playing the Bearcats. But if you caught, well, here's the other thing though, Bobby, there have been four American Conference tournaments. Cincinnati and UConn have met four times. They are going to play.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And they've been pretty good games. Obviously the most memorable one being the,
don't mention
it, the three quarter shot.
The one where he took four steps and a dribble in 0.8 seconds.
I'll tell you what though, if it goes in, I feel like you should be like, there's a rule, like with like the kid in New York who hit the shot. Like if you hit a ridiculous shot, you should be allowed to walk, double dribble, whatever.
I just don't know that you can do all the things that he did in 0.8 seconds.
No, that's tough to do. Yeah, that's tough.
It's very tough to do. I, you know, Rick Pitino thinks that that was fast.
Yeah, right. Rick Pitino also wouldn't put a guy on the ball though.
Yeah, but he might not last 0.8 seconds either. Cincinnati, you know, you've got to feel good about Cincinnati into the semis. Memphis, if they had Jeremiah Martin, they would be dangerous. But
yeah,
they're weird, man. Even without him, like they get a big win without him over Houston. The day that he goes out, and they look like they're on a roll, and then South Florida smokes them by 30.
Yeah, at Memphis too, right?
Yeah, and that's, and the stuff today, that's got to be a massive distraction. Now, you know, if I would do it, talking about, obviously, there's a bunch of talk around Memphis. The rumors are swirling that Tubby's going to be out and they're going to hire Penny.
Yeah.
I would do it. Like, yeah,
I mean,
it's,
if you get rid of Tubby, there's only two hires you can make. It's Penny or Steve Forbes.
Yeah, Steve Forbes is awesome. I'm a huge Steve Forbes
that,
guy.
And he has ties to Memphis. And he recruits Memphis well. But those are the only two hires. Like, if you get rid of Tubby, you better have one of those two locked up.
I would go Penny.
I would. But if Penny's like, you know what, I'm not ready for it.
Yeah, I feel you. Or maybe Forbes brings him in as, like, his number two.
Or that. That's what I'm saying. If you can bring Forbes in and, okay, Penny's your associate head coach.
Right.
There it is.
And you just groom Penny to be the guy whenever Forbes moves on or whatever the case may be. But
yeah,
I can't.
Forbes is going to coach a major conference sometime soon.
Very soon. The stink that's on him from the Bruce Pearl situation.
Over. Who cares?
It's over. Yeah. That guy's a hell of a coach. Like, right now, he would be a big-time high-major coach if that didn't happen.
Yeah, he's going to probably end up, if Memphis does hire Tubby, Ole Miss is going to hire Steve Forbes.
Yeah, and that'd be a hell of a hire for Ole Miss, but, man, that's a tough place to win.
Yeah, but, again,
he's into Memphis.
He's ability to recruit Memphis, and that's all that matters there.
You have to think Cincinnati and Tulsa in the semis.
Cincinnati? They've been playing well, but again, it's, you know.
Here's the
thing. They haven't beaten anybody.
Here's the thing. Tulsa gave Cincinnati their absolute best shot here.
And it was still an 8-point game.
And it still wasn't enough. Like, they put 47 on Cincinnati in the first half. And were only winning by three. So, I mean, are they going to make shots like that again? If they're going to make shots like they did in that first half, then, yeah, I can see it being a game. But what did you see in that second half? Cincinnati figured them out.
Right, right.
And tightened up on defense. And I think they only scored like 29 or 30 points in the second half. Actually, it was less than that, 25, 26 points in the second half. So I can't imagine, unless Cincinnati's just flat and with Gary Clark and Jacob Evans and Kyle Washington, I just don't see that. I think that team is focused on at least getting to the championship and seeing where the chips fall from there. That would be, if there's going to be an upset in this tournament, I guess that would be the one that you circle, other than maybe
Houston
Temple, Wichita State, because
the Yeah.
Because the regular season. I still think that Wichita State probably wins that by 15, but numbers would say that should be close. Houston, Wichita, I don't consider a major upset.
Right. I'm just saying from a seed standpoint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that game's going to be a blast to watch.
That like, would, that could, because the line will probably be like Wichita 4, 4.5.
Yeah.
Like it'll be close. It's not going to be – Wichita will probably get a point or two bump from the name and people public betting them, but – it'll probably be 4.5, 5, somewhere in that range. It's not going to be like a 9.5-point spread.
And this is a game Houston held Wichita State to 59 points in Houston.
That's, yeah. But that's also at Houston. Who knows what happens, yeah.
Well, that's at Texas Southern.
Well, yeah, but it's, I mean. I
with 3,000 people there.
Yeah, that game was loud, though. Like, I remember watching that. It was loud.
But that game would be, I think, has the opportunity to be one of the more exciting games of the weekend because, you know, Houston's probably thinking maybe we can get up to a 5. Maybe we can, you know, they're sitting at everybody consensus is probably about a 6 right now. I think that's where they're at on bracket matrix.
Yeah.
One of the mid 6 seeds. You beat Wichita, maybe you can get up to a 5.
Right. If you lose, maybe you fall to a 7, depending what happens behind you.
And if you're at a 7, then you're facing a 2 in the second round.
Right.
Like that would be a big game for Houston. And Wichita, you know, they want to stay a 4. If they go lose to Cincinnati on the final Sunday of the season and then lose on the next Saturday in the tournament to Houston,
they're a 5.
They're a 5.
Or 6 even.
Yeah, so there's a lot that's going to be on the line in that game. And, you know, it'll be interesting, third game in 3 days, what does that team that wins have left?
Yeah, and then even the title, if Wichita and Cincinnati hold serve, that title game means a lot too because Cincinnati's going to be trying to hold on to a 2 seed.
I don't think it matters, Bobby. At the 3:30 game on Sunday?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Maybe – I'm trying to think like – because I think if Cincinnati loses to Wichita, I don't think they can be a 2 seed.
I think it's going to be set. I think if they get to the finals, they're a 2 seed.
Yeah, well, so, all right, so you have 5 teams ahead of them for sure right now, I would say. Obviously, Xavier, Nova, Virginia, Kansas, Duke.
Yeah.
And then
Purdue is already dormant, so yeah, it'll be interesting with them.
I think
because
Purdue,
I think they're pretty safe, but what's going to be interesting is because they're off, do they out of sight, out of mind type deal?
Right. That resume is good. Like, that resume is I put that resume ahead of Cincinnati for now.
I would too. Now, North Carolina,
and
if they lose in the AACC tournament, that's 10. They can't be a 2 seed with 10 losses.
I agree, unless they maybe get to the title game.
Maybe.
If they go 2-1 against Duke, beat Miami, and then lose to Virginia in a close game, I could understand it. But
maybe.
What about this name? Tennessee.
Well, that's going to be interesting because obviously Tennessee and Auburn are both kind of right there behind Cincinnati.
Yeah.
If one of them wins the SEC tournament on Saturday,
but it's they play Sunday.
Oh, that is Sunday, isn't it?
That's why I think that we might not have it set because if Tennessee or Auburn's in the title game,
maybe
that might be open still.
But the problem is, Bobby, they've talked so many times about seeding or the bracketing is like an hour of the entire 200-hour process, which is absurd to me. Like, that's my biggest gripe in the whole thing.
I spend an hour on it a week.
Right. Like, that should be what takes the most time because that's what you have to get right.
Right.
Especially in a year like this.
Right. Matchups matter. Like, coaches don't care where the game is. They just care about the matchup.
Right. This year, the matchups are everything.
Right.
Because there's no dominant team. There's no, you know, all of these teams have made crazy losses. That's the one thing that's on Cincinnati's resume, they do not have a bad loss.
Yeah, they've avoided it.
You know, they've said they're going to look at that more because you should be rewarded for not having a bad game or having any slip-ups. Does that get them an extra boost that maybe, you know, a North Carolina doesn't get because they lost at home to Wofford?
Right.
You know, that's the question that we don't – like, that's why you have to be in that room. But really – North Carolina, Cincinnati, Auburn, Michigan State, Tennessee.
Yeah.
You can put them basically all in a hat. Like,
maybe even Michigan. I'd throw Michigan
maybe. Yeah. I think they're a slight tick behind.
Yeah,
but
2 wins over Michigan State, a win over Purdue, a win over Ohio State. Like, that's And they don't have a bad loss. I mean, I guess they did lose in Nebraska, but that's not necessarily a bad loss. It was at Nebraska.
No, Nebraska's kind of, you know, not on the bubble, but
yeah, I mean, it's a top 100 loss, a top 75 right. loss. But yeah, it's gonna be interesting because I think the two seeds are one of the more intriguing. Like to me, there's five teams for the one seed, and then like another eight teams for two seeds.
Yeah, we probably Texas Tech. I would have to say probably isn't in there.
Not the way they closed. They could have been.
But there's seven teams for the rest of the 3-2 spots and the 4-3 spots. There's seven teams that are all
that's crazy.
Pretty tight. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll just focus on Cincinnati and Wichita real quick. Cincinnati, who would be the worst matchup for them? If they're a two seed, if you're a Cincinnati fan, what seven type seed?
Nevada.
Yeah, well, I think Nevada should be higher than a seven, even too.
I'm just looking at bracket matrix. Nevada is a seven.
That's dumb. It should be a six at the minimum.
Yeah, I would not they're want good. Any part of that offense.
Even with Lindsey Drew hurt, they are so good.
Yeah, and it's a matter of, you know, it's why Virginia, even though they're the consensus number one, I bet they're not picked to win it in 15% of the brackets. Because at some point in time, people are going to make tough shots against your defense.
Right.
Nevada is a team that can make tough shots against your defense. The Martin twins are very good.
Yeah. Kendall Stevens can shoot it anywhere inside a half court.
Yeah.
Like, they have high major talent. Like that's
exactly.
Not, that's like I mean they do because they transfer, but like Jordan Caroline could have played anywhere too.
Anywhere. Texas A&M would worry me a little just in that their big guys match up with Kyle and Gary.
Yeah. Professional bigs.
Yeah, you know that's the size and length. You're not going to stop Washington and Clark, but if you can neutralize them to where it's not an advantage Cincinnati, then you're in pretty good shape in terms of the matchups.
Or you get them on the bench with fouls because you're just banging it down low every time.
The 10s, who do we got as 10s?
I don't think any 10s should really scare Cincinnati.
No, St. Bonaventure would have been a great story last year.
Yeah.
Because Jalen Adams and Troy Copain are cousins.
Right, right.
So that would have been
seeds, I mean, maybe Arizona State just because they proved they can beat anybody.
Yeah.
But they're a disaster right now.
Kansas State got their whooping last year. I don't think they want any part of the Bearcats.
Right. Well, I mean, they're built similar. And
Cincinnati's got better talent.
The better version of them, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe if, like, I'll tell you what, maybe if USC or UCLA slide into there. I guess they've already played UCLA, so that wouldn't matter.
Yeah, UCLA wouldn't matter.
But USC, maybe just because, you know, they have pros. Like, McLaughlin can play. Matt Tuge is a pro that could cause some problems. But, again, I mean, I would pick Cincinnati 9 out of 10 times. So if you're a 2 seed then, so you're in the Sweet 16. You're facing the 3 seeds. Who do you, like, who would Cincinnati want to avoid there? Obviously Michigan State.
Michigan. Because of their shot making, probably Michigan. I think Cincinnati would match up really well with Auburn and Tennessee.
Yeah, because Tennessee's similar type. Auburn's so banged up that I'm going to be surprised. All credit to world to Auburn. I think Bruce Pearl's the top 4 coach for Coach of the Year this year, but they're just so banged up right now. And when you don't have any guys over what 6-7 anymore, I don't know.
And I would I think North Carolina would be a good matchup for Cincinnati.
Yeah, because. I think
it's not North Carolina of old, like
right. And I think, you know, Jennifer is a good enough defender that could bother Barry, and then Barry wouldn't be able to stop Broome. So you could really go offense defense there.
Yeah, and I mean, that would be a fun storyline though because Theo Pinson and Gary Clark actually played for CP3, and they were on the CP3 team that lost to I think Each One Teach One. In the Peach Jam finals.
Okay.
And Theo Pinson and Gary Clark were the two best players on that team. So that would be a fun one.
And then
there would at least be a little storyline there.
For Wichita, who would you kind of, if you're a Wichita fan, who do you not want to see if you're, you know, let's say you're in the 4-5 game? What type of team bothers Wichita besides Cincinnati?
I don't think anybody.
Yeah.
Kentucky's so weird because you just don't know about that. Like, you don't know. Like,
You could get one seed Kentucky, or you could get, you know, NIT Kentucky.
Right. Like, you have no idea who you're getting with them. But that, I mean, that's kind of become like a rivalry now in the tournament, Kentucky and Wichita State.
Yeah, that, like, for Kentucky, it's Kentucky, Wichita, and Kentucky, West Virginia.
Yeah. I think they'd handle Ohio State. Gonzaga would be interesting.
I think they're a little under the radar right now.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see. I'm anxious to see them tonight, you know, as we record here on Tuesday, because if they blow out BYU, you know, a lot of people go, oh, okay, well, they won the West Coast. How good are they? Like, no, they're good. Like,
yeah.
They have pros. They have guys that have been there, you know, Perkins and Hachimura I like a lot, and Tilly.
Does anybody really want to deal with Arizona?
No. I was talking about that last week with Doster, and we recorded after Sean Miller's first game back.
Yeah.
And the question was, you know, what's your take on Arizona? And I said, my buddy and I, we always look at a bracketology and say, okay, who's your final four just based on matchups? And I always try to find a way to put Arizona there. Like, I think they're that good. I don't trust their defense necessarily, but they're that talented.
I think they've got the best player in the country right now. I mean, it's really close between him and Bagley.
Yeah, they're the number one pick, I think. Yeah.
I'm just trying in terms of like a guy that in a tournament game is hell.
Yeah, he's going to go drop 20 and 20.
Right. Like if you're trying to scout him, say on a Wichita State, and you've got one night, like you've got a Friday to try to figure out what the hell you're going to do with DeAndre Ayton.
Oh,
good
and,
luck.
And Alonzo Trier, who can go get 25.
Right. And, and you know, Raleigh Alkins is no slouch either. Like, you're looking at that and you're going, I don't know what the hell. Like, even like Shaq Morris, he's a monster. He's still 6'6".
Yeah.
DeAndre Ayton is still like 7 inches taller than him.
Yep.
And
better.
Yeah. So, but the funny thing is, if you're Wichita State, if you get past that 4-5 game, boy, I like Wichita State against Villanova or Virginia. I like them a lot against Kansas. Wichita State Xavier would be a blast.
That would be a really good game.
That might be 94, 86, 88. Like,
and
if both of those teams are on, watch out.
With two coaches that are excellent game plans.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be fun.
That would be that might be one of the more fun games of the tournament if we got to see that.
That could be similar to the Kentucky Wichita game from 14.
Yeah.
Where it was just no lead, like the biggest lead's gonna be like 6 points.
And you get what? You get Shamet and JP.
Yeah.
And Trayvon and you know, Shaq Morris, like,
and even Marshall on Shamet would be he has enough length to bother him. That would be a lot of fun.
That would be a great, but I like if you're Wichita State, like that 4-5 game might be more of a concern than what you get in the one game in the next round.
Right. Yeah, very much. Yeah, that's possible.
So the fun one for me, the what would be interesting for me is if say Houston ends up a 7, they could be hell for a 2.
Yeah, depending who it is, you know, I think Duke would have no problem with them, but.
I don't know, man. Duke, I will say, you have to give Duke credit because their defense has improved drastically.
Yeah, it's really good now.
Yeah. But Houston has two guys in Corey Davis Jr. and Armani Brooks that hit. If they're hot, they hit tough shots. Like, heavily contested shots.
But how are they stopping Carter and Bagley?
That's a good question. Luckily, they have three centers and 15 fouls.
Yeah, that's true. So, all right, man, I'll let you get out of here. Appreciate it. Where can everyone find your stuff?
BearcatJournal.com, obviously, for all the best in Cincinnati Bearcat football, basketball, baseball coverage. You can also find me on Twitter at Chad Brendel and at Bearcat Journal. That's not me. I've got somebody that runs it for me. But that's where you can find it. And he's a little bit more of a smartass than I am. So it's always fun.
All right. And now I welcome on from the Athletic and Kentucky Sports Radio, my man, Aaron Torres. Aaron, what's going on, man?
Oh, you know, just in the middle of the best week of the calendar sports year. I love this time of year. I was telling you off air. Everyone goes crazy over the first 2 days of the NCAA tournament. But give me all the best teams playing 3, 4, 5 times in a week against good competition, MSG, Vegas. It's just, I can't even express how much I love this time of year. I just can't do it. I can't do it.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but like you said, you get awesome, like mid-major games that kind of stand alone, like we have tonight and earlier in the week.
Yep.
And then you have the big boys coming in, and like you said, they're at the known places. Big East is at MSG. ACC is in Brooklyn. Like, it's awesome.
By the way,
go ahead.
Can I just jump in on one thing really quick? I know you're a big Wake Forest guy.
I am.
As I see all these old school, like Wake Forest, UNC highlights during championship week, we got to get the ACC back to Greensboro. Like, I know that the Big Ten was a big hit at Madison Square Garden, but the ACC at Barclays, first of all, Barclays is not MSG.
No.
And I'm just saying, Greensboro was so awesome back in the day. We got to make that happen again.
So I want it to be a five-year rotation. You can rotate, you know, year after year between Greensboro and Charlotte. And then once every 5 years, like if Charlotte's hosting, you know, the first round of the NCAA tournament, then go to Barclays, one every 5 years.
Sure.
This way you keep Syracuse fans happy and Boston College fans happy and everything like that.
And Pitt fans, if they'll exist after this season, I'm not sure they will. But,
well, they should have, because Stallings will probably be gone.
Very true, very true.
But the tournament I want to talk to you about is the one that I know you're the most jazzed up for, because you've been the fucking talking stick of this league, even more than like graduates of these programs. That's you're the SEC stand this year.
I am. I people literally have asked me, like, is the conference secretly cutting you a check? And the truth is, it isn't. All that really happened was that I worked at Fox Sports last year, and I did, you know, I did all the postseason content where you look at the next year's top 25 and all that stuff. And so it was weird. All it really is that I looked at how these schools, like an Auburn, like a Mississippi State, have been recruiting, and then you see that Texas A&M is going to return their whole roster this year. Alabama was going to return their whole roster and add Colin Sexton. Missouri was adding Michael Porter. We know Kentucky's going to be good. We know Florida's going to be good. And so I just said, I think this conference is going to be really good. And I don't know if people just weren't ready to talk college basketball in, like, you know, August and July, but it became this thing where I felt like I'm like people thought it was like some homer thing. And I was just like, no, I think this league's going to be really good. And so it went from me, like, just trying to, like, defend my opinion to the pom-pom waiver SEC basketball homer guy. So it's been a strange evolution. It's been a fun evolution, but I'll tell you what, Riggs, in the end, I was right. This league's awesome. And I think they're going to get 8 teams for sure. Probably about 8 teams, possibly 9 with Mississippi State, depending on what happens this week.
Yeah, and this tournament, first off, it's weird because, like we mentioned, it's being held in St. Louis, so it's not the traditional Atlanta or Nashville spot, which, fine, just do it once every 5 years and you'll keep Riggsy happy. But it's wide open, right? Like, Auburn's the one seed. They're banged up, obviously losing Macklemore. Tennessee's a 2 seed. You know, they're really good, but they're not scary good. Florida's a 3 seed. They can beat anybody. They can lose anybody. Kentucky, same thing as the 4 seed. And then 5 seed, like, does Michael Porter Jr. play for Missouri? Like, there's a lot of question marks. Is this the most open? When's the last time we've seen a conference tournament this wide open?
Yeah, Riggs, that's honestly my huge takeaway, is that there are a lot of what I believe to be really good teams, and I think that was backed up in the out-of-conference play, obviously in the SEC Big 12 Challenge, which the SEC won without Auburn and Missouri even playing. But when I look at this conference, what's weird is even the really good conferences that are really deep, usually there are tiers, right? Like, the Big East, I think, is awesome this year. You know, St. John's finished 9th, and they beat Villanova and Duke in back-to-back games. Like, I think that league is awesome. Exactly. Like, there's a tier where it's like Nova, Xavier, and then there's 3 or 4 teams, and then there's 3 or 4 teams after that. And by technical definition, you could say it's the same in the SEC. But I mean, is it really like Auburn, kind of, you just hit the nail on the head, you know, for people who may not know a ton about them. Not only were the 2 guys suspended as part of the FBI probe early, but really their only real low post presence was hurt late in the year. I think they went 2-2 down the stretch. Tennessee is good, but they don't do anything that blows you off the page, that, you know, you just feel good that, you know, for a lot of your listeners, like, if they're an 8-point favorite, like, I'm not sitting there confident that they're going to blow the doors off somebody by 10 or 12. And so, yeah, it's just one of those weird conferences. What I've found with watching this league this year is it's really kind of an in the moment conference. And what I mean by that is throughout the regular season, we'll see how it translates this weekend. It's just really, can you get hot and can you sustain it? And by the way, if you lose one game, do your best not to lose three or four. You know, when Kentucky was on a 4-game losing streak, everyone said, oh, you're just a Kentucky apologist. It's like, but I never felt like they were in that much trouble. I just thought they were playing a lot of really good teams. And sure enough, they closed the season winning 4 out of 5 and 4 in a row at one point.
Yeah, it was a combination for Kentucky. Like, they didn't look good, but they were also playing. You know, they lost to Auburn. They lost to Tennessee. They lost to, Texas A&M and Florida?
Missouri was the first game. Missouri was the first game. Yeah.
That Saturday, right. Well, so you lost to, you know, three of the top five teams and then a Texas A&M team that everyone kind of thought was going to win the league.
Yeah, and three of those games were on the road. And so, you know, and it's funny because, like, right now, by the way, there was a stretch where Arkansas couldn't win a game and all their fans would say, oh, we're done. We're not even going to make the tournament. Now they're a lock going into St. Louis and they're playing for NCAA tournament seeding. And right now that team is honestly Alabama. I mean, you look at Alabama's resume. They beat Auburn. They beat Tennessee. They beat the top two teams. Actually, they beat the top three teams in this league because they beat Florida as well. But they caught a bad stretch, and that's the beauty of this league. So I'm kind of rambling here, but I'm saying to say, like, it's just one of those leagues where there really isn't that much, as weird as it sounds, that separates one from 9, 10, 11. I mean, Georgia, which I think finished 11th or 10th, beat Tennessee, beat Florida. So it's going to be a wild tournament. I don't think there's any team that feels like one a prohibitive favorite, and I don't feel like there's any team that feels great that they have a draw that they're going to make a deep run.
Yeah, so you mentioned Alabama, and I want to go there real quick. Alabama A&M is the 8-9 game to kick off Thursday in the, quote, second round of the tournament, but really the first day that everyone's kind of locked into it.
Sure.
How important is that game for both teams involved? Because I think that's one cool thing this year, not just in the SEC, but kind of across the country. There's a lot of those 8-9, 7-10 conference games that mean a whole heck of a lot. And this is one, like, yeah, you said, because if Alabama loses here, okay, that's, I mean, you don't lose, 8 in a row, 7 in a row, and feel great heading into Selection Sunday. But you beat A&M, that's another quality win. You get another chance at Auburn. Like, all of a sudden, like you said, you could be in the semifinals and no one's batting an eye.
That's exactly right, and that's how I feel. And I actually had a couple of Alabama fans ask me today kind of what my thoughts were. And it's weird because Texas A&M is a weird team that they don't have – a great win-loss record. They weren't even, obviously, SEC play, finishing with the 8th seed, but they were so good out of conference. They beat West Virginia, beat Oklahoma State on a neutral, beat Penn State on a neutral, won at USC, a game that I was at. So Texas A&M is probably okay, but it's one of those things, Riggs, you know, and this is something I'm sure that you get asked about a lot. You know, everybody wants to know, what does my team need to do to get in?
Yeah. And it's, well, impossible to look at in a vacuum.
Exactly, and that's exactly what I was going to say. Like, Texas A&M should feel good if, you know, should be okay if they don't win this game. But what if Syracuse goes on a run at the ACC tournament? Right. What if Louisville goes on a run? What if BYU, and so it's just, yeah, and I think that that is a great way, as you said, the first big day of the tournament, I think that's a great way to kick it off because, first of all, A&M, first of all, they just played 2 days ago. Guys were getting texts late in the game. There was some real chippiness. Colin Sexton got in the head of Texas A&M's point guard. So there's already chippiness. And then you add that Alabama, I think, is certainly playing for their season. And if I was Billy Kennedy, the Texas A&M coach, that's the message that I would be giving my team, too. I don't know that A&M has to win this game, but man, I you'd feel a little queasy going into Selection Sunday, or at least watching the other tournaments, if you don't win it. But for the Aggies,
how many teams do you think have legit shots at winning this tournament based on matchups and where they're, you know, where they're playing? Obviously, going from Alabama having to win, or even Missouri having to win, four games is a little different than saying Florida having to win three. How many legit SEC title contenders do you think there are?
It's weird because it's one of those deals, like you said, Riggs, where I think you can get hot. So the winner of that Texas A&M Alabama game, you know, they get a beat up Auburn team right now. And right. So both of those teams beat Auburn during the season. And you sit there and say, well, now if you beat Auburn, you're in the semis. And then who knows what happens? I think I feel like the champion is going to come from one of the top four seeds or possibly Arkansas. I don't think Arkansas is going to get hot, but I could see a scenario. I think everybody else, either the draw is too tough or you look at a team like, say, Missouri. I just don't think they can score enough on four straight games.
Yeah, and you're talking about having to go Georgia, Kentucky, and then Auburn, Alabama, A&M in a row. Like, that's no easy. It's good defense you have to go up against, too.
Yeah, and I think like the thing that guys like you and I talk about this time of year is, you know, to win championships, whether it's in a conference, especially, by the way, people talk about the NCAA tournament, but sometimes winning a conference, you know, I had Jim Calhoun tell me this once. He said he felt like it was just as tough to win the Big East every year as it was to win the NCAA tournament, which sounds great.
Not surprising. Yeah. Teams know you, right? Like, exactly. You've been scouted all year as opposed to maybe a week of scouting. Like, I was talking to Travis Steele, Xavier assistant coach, earlier this week, and I asked him, I said, you know, when do you start scouting? Like, you know, do you have a list of 10 schools that you go, okay, here's who we think we might be going up against in the first round of the NCAA tournament? And he said, no, like, he's been on some staffs that have kind of done that, but found out it just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Here, you just know the teams, right? Right
here, you know, like in conference format, you know the teams. Like, you know, okay, we know the scouting report for anybody that we're going to play.
Exactly. And so I think to kind of answer the question, I think you have to be versatile enough to play a lot of different teams in a lot of different ways. And you also, by the way, have to be fresh in the SEC's case come Sunday afternoon for a championship game. So I think it's probably the top four, and I would add Arkansas. But if you, you know, I'm going to Vegas for the Pac-12 tournament in the morning. And if you told me, you know, bet your life savings on one and your life depends on it, or shoot, bet $100 and feel good about it, I can't say that there's like a team that I feel really, really, really good about at this point.
Does Michael Porter play in this thing?
Oh, you know,
because that's the biggest question, right?
Right. 100%. No, I think it's on 100% the biggest question. Riggs, to me, you know, Quanzo Martin is such a kind of guarded guy by nature.
Yep.
And
quiet.
He's been so kind of open about this. Like, even before Michael Porter was cleared, he kept saying, well, you know, if he's cleared, we'll play him if the doctors give us the okay. So it leads me to believe that at some point he's going to play. But again, it comes kind of down to what we've been talking about is like, well, shit, man, like if you're on a two-game winning streak and he feels good Saturday morning going into a semifinal, do you want to mess with the chemistry? Do you want to mess with what's working? I would say 70% being no.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, though. I mean, the kid wants to play. Yeah, he's from Columbia. Yeah, and like, what can he give and all that stuff? But I think the biggest thing is what we were just talking about, Riggs, is, you know, you get in a comfort zone. It's so tough to win these conference tournaments against teams you know. And kind of what I just said, like, if they win one or two games in a row, as great as Michael Porter Jr. is, and he is incredible, like, is it something you really want to upset the apple cart? Maybe you do. Maybe you feel like you clinched a tournament berth and you're just – trying to figure things out for the big dance in a week. But, you know, I would lean towards no, because I think they'll either get eliminated or I think they start playing well and just say, we're not going to tinker with stuff right now.
All right. So you mentioned you're going to Vegas. You get $100 to buy me something pretty with these odds.
Oh.
Auburn 4-1, Tennessee 4-1, Kentucky 4.5-1, Florida 5-1, Mississippi State 8-1, A&M 10-1, Alabama 12-1, Arkansas 12-1. Missouri 14-1. Everyone else is 25-1 or better. Who are you putting the $100 on?
Wow. Well, I think the best value there, and my buddy Todd Furman from that lives in Vegas and is a professional gambler would make fun of me because I kind of just.
This is from Oddshark. I would say these odds are from Oddshark.
No, I know, but I talk about value all the time as if I know what the hell I'm talking about. Like when I was in Vegas over the summer for Summer League, I think I bet like $20 on Conor McGregor to beat Floyd Mayweather at like 25-1. And I told Todd, I was like, oh, I'm getting great value. He's like, that's terrible value. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Right.
So like based on like my simplistic understanding of like odds and all that stuff, I would say Arkansas at 12-1. I don't think they're going to win, but I could see a scenario where they win. And I like them at those odds. Of the top four teams, I probably like Florida at 5-1 the most.
That was my answer as well.
Is that what you're going to say? Yeah.
Just the fact that they are in the bottom half of the bracket, which I think shapes up a little bit nicer for them, right? Like the top half, you have A&M, Alabama, Missouri, Kentucky, Auburn. The bottom half, you have Florida, Tennessee, Arkansas, LSU, Mississippi State. Like if I'm Florida, I'm much happier down there at that three seed. Right, like you get Arkansas away from Bud Walton, which is a completely different Arkansas team than Bud Walton Arkansas, and then Tennessee, like Florida. If Florida's shooting the ball well, they can beat Tennessee, and you just go, okay, that's all we have to do, and we're in the finals.
Yeah, no, and I think that's probably the smart money. And the other thing too is kind of goes back to what we were saying at the beginning. Florida just so happens to be the team that's playing well right now.
Yeah.
And they've won three in a row. I don't know off the top of my head how many teams coming into this tournament have won three straight games, which sounds insane, but I don't think it's very many. So yeah, I think Florida's probably the smartest bet. I mean, if you wanted a little bit longer odds, I would go Arkansas. But yeah, if I was going to Vegas and you gave me a hundy and said, Torres, I'm really putting my faith in you. I got bills to pay this month. I'd probably put it on Florida.
What calm Kentucky fans down, because they're, you know, last time we saw, not Kentucky fans, calm the casual fan down who saw, tuned in Saturday on national TV, saw Kentucky get murdered by Florida. And now they are four seed. And I think a lot of people are going, well, this is a one and done type team. Like they're a six seed. They're not that good. Why should people buy into this Kentucky team?
Well, this is going to be my SEC homer response here. One, I really believe that playing in this league every single night, it toughened you up this year. And look, you know, everyone thinks, oh, Torres is the SEC homer guy. I'm not going to say that a year from now when Colin Sexton and Robert Williams and all these guys are in the pros, but this year the league was really, really, really good. And so I think that it's toughened them up. I don't think that there's really a style of play that they'll see in the NCAA tournament that they didn't see throughout the year. You know, you go across the board, Auburn, awesome perimeter play, quick guards, you know, all the way through Texas A&M, that's big and physical down low and doesn't have great guard play. I mean, they saw every style, everything in between, zone, man-to-man, full court press at Arkansas. So, you know, I just think it's about the draw. And then, oh, by the way, you look at the physical tools of all the Kentucky players, and I know it's kind of a running gag of talking about length and athleticism and wingspan and all that stuff, but shit, there's a reason that coaches recruit to that and the NBA drafts to it. It's because that stuff matters. And so, you know, like we were saying earlier, when a team can scout you and they've played you earlier in the year or they know your personnel, it's a lot different than, you know, winning a first round game as a six seed and having to play, I don't know, whoever as a three seed in the second round. I'm just trying to think of off the top of my head who could potentially be a three seed. But the point is that they got basically, you know, less than 36 hours to prepare for you. And there's no way that they can really prepare for the size and the length that Kentucky brings. So, you know, I think there are like a lot of teams this year. I don't think there's a lot of teams that you can just sit here and say, you know, during championship week that it really doesn't matter the draw. You know, they're going to get to the second weekend. Like, there's not many teams you can say that about, if any. And I think Kentucky's one of those teams that with the right draw, they'll be playing in the Sweet 16 with the chance to go to the Elite Eight. With the wrong draw, they'll be home after the first weekend. The one thing I would add on Kentucky specifically, you know, Calipari's got a pretty good track record of in one-and-done NCAA tournament situations having his teams good to go. I mean, everyone kind of criticizes him for the one national championship in 8 years, which isn't easy, by the way, but he's got six Elite Eights in 8 years. That's unbelievable, and nobody talks about it. So I, you know, again, to use the Vegas analogy, if I was going to Vegas tomorrow and had to bet on over under, you know, two NCAA tournament wins or 1.5 NCAA tournament wins, which would get you to the Sweet 16. I'm going over just because Kentucky's proven they can play with just about anybody, and they got the coach who's been there before.
Aaron, my man, where can everyone find your stuff at?
Oh, boy. Hit me up on Twitter at Aaron_Torres. Write for The Athletic, Aaron Torres Sports Podcast. Some good guests over the last couple weeks. Paul Feinbaum, Barstool Reeves has been on in the past. De'Aaron Fox was on a few weeks ago. So College Hoops Podcast. Aaron_Torres on Twitter. Do some radio stuff here and there. But that's the best place to get me. And Reeves, I appreciate you having me, man.
Yeah, man. Enjoy your time in Vegas.